you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Nextel, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Nextel, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous. Listen to me, we're at it.
Say, thanks for joining us here. Absolutely. For the whole show. Matt and I both had technical problems, but we're all good and we're started. And you figured it out, Matt? You're all good?
Dude, I am good. I apologize. Normally, I'm a loudmouth. Safe, you can relate to this. I had two of my amateur guys fighting over the weekend. And one of my guys was down two rounds, young Marcus. And I had to give him a Safe Saeed special in between second and third round. And
What happened?
He pulled that shit off. He was losing two rounds to this tough kid from Queens, this tough Tiger Showman's kid. And this kid was putting his hands on him and stalking him. And my guy's like into anime, right? So I'm going to paraphrase it, but I got in there. I go, look, forget about those two rounds. Right now, the last is 3 minute rounds because it's amateur. I go, these next 3 minutes, you're in your fucking anime movie. You're the hero. I fucking went. He's like, yes. Yeah. Dude, he went out there. He fired off some kicks, took him down, took his back. Shit. 28 seconds left. He strangled him. And it was one of those emotions. It was up there with one of the.
You know, that's so awesome. You know, it's so funny because, and Matt understands this, sometimes these local fights with these local kids, they mean just as fucking much as the fight in the UFC. Just because you can see the family, you can see everybody, the emotion, all the people that are there to watch them. I mean, it's something else, man. That feeling never goes away. So that's awesome.
And that's a good story too. Like I that's why I'm glad I'm not fighting, because you would have said, this is your fucking anime movie. And I would have went, yeah. And then walked out and got my jaw broken.
It was very, when he fired off the kicks, and then, because he did what I told him, and when he got the takedown, I'm like, abandon the front kick, go back to your roundhouse kicks, fire him off. He then get a hold of him. When he did that and took the guy down, I was content. I was happy right there. I was like,
if this ends with him
going after him like this, I seen what I needed to see. Yeah. And he's. But for him to take the back and finish the way he did, and the other kid was really a tough kid, and
look at where he trains jiu-jitsu. What did you think was going to happen? Take the back and tilt. Where do you think he learned that from, Matt?
I'll tell you, he's like a young Aljo. This kid, as far as jiu-jitsu wise, he's very good in jiu-jitsu. You know, it's good. And the other kid, Donnie, is a kid that would, you know, made some wrong decisions. Now he's making right decisions. But I'll tell you, he's a young, like a 21-year-old kid. But, man, he's made the fight, this kid. And I told Marcus, out of everybody, you should be thanking Donnie. Because Donnie, they were sparring together for this thing. They both won by rear naked choke. But Marcus did a lot of play sparring. I go, when he started sparring Donnie, go, this is the first time you were ever really sparring. This is the fight. Because Donnie was going after him like he fucking owed him money. He was fucking like a pit bull. So I don't know. Anyway, that's why my voice is like this.
You're screaming.
Hey, Oh. You know what though? That moment, those moments for those kids will be there for their whole life. Their whole life, they'll remember those moments. And every time you win an MMA fight, it's such a big fucking deal. And people just don't understand. I mean, I know it could be for no money, but it's the journey and the process. And look at how Matt, how emotional he is and how charged he is. And this guy's was a world champion and coach world champions. And he's talking about his amateur kids. Yep. And that's why we do this shit. You know, that's exactly why we do it. So that's a great story, man. I love it.
So Matt, I texted you, Matt, too, on Saturday. I think I texted you complaining about the judges. I didn't realize that you were,
I was home by then. I got
home.
I got home just by 10 o'clock. The fights by me, they were at the Westbury Space Theater. It's 15 minutes from my house.
Okay, I'm thinking Atlantic City.
They started at 6 o'clock. They were done by like 9-ish. So I got home in time for the whole main card. And I saw some of the undercard also. There was some controversial decisions. I want to talk about some of those. Obviously, you saw the fights. Yeah.
Oh, I saw him. I saw him up close. The good, the bad, and the ugly, man.
You must be happy with Alex Morano, though. He looked really good. Short notice fight. I mean, he's terrific. What an amazing striker.
You know, the thing about it is, you know, you got to love this kid. I mean, he's just the balls on this kid. You know, he's always the one. Hey, coach, there's a fight. You know, last minute, he said, I'll jump in. I don't, you know. And everyone's saying, oh, you know, Ponzi's going to kill you. Why they pick Morono? Look at this little white kid. He's a weak. He's this. He's that. Alex was beating the shit out of him the whole time. And for him to come, you know, he was training, so it's not off the couch. But for him to come in there and to throw down like that, and I mean, and he clearly was just the technician in the fight. He kept controlling it. And I just saw that big right hand, and I know Ponzi's all heart, and I know he wasn't going away. And, you know, I told Alex in between rounds, and he knows. And that's what's so heartbreaking is that he had that fight won. And I mean, he had it won fairly easily, but he doesn't play it safe, and he wasn't going to go out there and wrestle. You know, he likes to stand, even though he's a black belt. And you make one mistake against a guy like Ponzi, and Ponzi coming off of those L's, I mean, he was hungry, you know, so he wasn't going to quit any moment. And that's why we were trying to be cautious. But, you know, credit to him. He was a very sweet guy after he came up to Alex and he said, I fucking needed that a lot worse than you did, man. I'm sorry. That's what he said to Alex. And Alex, you know, Alex is a gamer. He said, yeah, you know, maybe we'll meet down the road. But it was bittersweet to see him fight so well for so long and to execute at that level and kind of show everybody who he really is on his first pay-per-view and then have him lose. But I'm very proud of him. But, you know, we don't celebrate losses. We never have. So we get back to work.
But there is the good thing, though, when a guy loses, like, I mean, it does suck. But it's got to at least be comforting to know that his stock went way up. I mean, everyone knows he took it on short notice and he was replaced in Lawler, and everybody wants to see him fight again. It's like everybody's like, what a fucking amazing fight he fought. I mean, again, 100%. Considering coming 2 weeks out and replacing Lawler, he only.
Yeah, 5 days. We took the fight on.
Oh,
we took
the fight 5 days. Monday. I thought it was 2 weeks.
We took,
there you go.
No, we took the fight on Monday. I talked to Sean Monday night. So really, he had 4 days. I mean, he had no camp. No camp, zero. And, I'm super proud of him. I love that kid. He was on a 4-fight streak. And I think that he's a guy that can contend in the top 15. And he's just getting better and better. He's such an intelligent kid. And he listens so well. He's got a very, you know, high fight IQ. He has a great gym. You know, he's like Matt. He's a great black belt and trains a bunch of kids and stuff. Just a great kid. And I'm proud of him. But, yeah, we'll get him back in there. And, you know, he's hungry. He wants to win. And we'll turn it around.
Jimmy, when I did the show from Florida with Dean Thomas, you were off. Yes. We had Alex on. And he's winning in life. I see a lot of we had a school. We have a lot of similarities as far as our road, like. Yep. I both have jiu-jitsu schools and that type of thing. And he's really winning in life. He's got his head straight. And what's really, it's frustrating that he lost, but it's definitely, as far as being upsetting, yes. But at the same time, if he went in there and got blown out of the water, we got a lot of work to do. Now it's more like, fuck, dude, one zig when you don't zag, we know this fucking game. It's not like you go back and, it's always going to the drawing board, but it's not like you have to start from scratch, man. That was all, about as in the bank as any fight.
Yeah. But I will say this, and, you know, to your point, both you guys, Dana came up to us and, you know, said, I couldn't be happier with this fight. Like, you guys really came in and came to work. And he said, I'm going to give him his win bonus. He said that to us in the cage. And, you know, and for Dana to do that, Sean called us after work and said, hey, you know, I can't thank you enough, you know, for you guys stepping in. And he said, I want to talk, you know, and Alex is going to get a new contract as well. So as far as what you guys are saying, you are right. I mean, his stock does go up and he does move forward. But seeing how disappointed he was obviously hard for me. And, you know, as a coach, you always want to see your kids win. You always want to see that joy in their face and have that smile. They're just like your kids. You know, you love them like your kids. So I look forward to him in his next fight, you know, having success and getting back on track.
But as far as having his head, like Matt said, his head straight, I think it was one of the pre-fight interviews where he was saying something about, title contention. He's like, but I got a four. I just got to extend this streak. Yeah, and then we're taught, like, I have one more fight and I want a shot. He seemed to be like really a smart way of looking at, you know, the next thing in front of him.
He's one of those guys that's so humble. It's like, you're like, man, you know, you actually need to turn the switch a little bit and give yourself a little bit more credit. Yeah. Absolutely. Because, you know, there's guys that haven't done, you know, the guys that had 17 fights inside the UFC, you know, and I mean, I think he was 11-4. He's had multiple win streaks. It was 9-2, I think, in his last 11. So, I mean, that's a career. That's a great career. And I just think that, you know, I think he's actually getting better and better. So I'm excited to see what he does moving forward. And I think, like I said, guy like that, I would like to see him ranked to say it wasn't, you know, in the top 15 in the world. I'd like to see him maybe have a main event on a fight night, you know, in the next year. I would like to see him get more opportunities because I think he can do them. And he's just such a quiet, nice guy. Sometimes those guys don't give any shine, but you know, I'm glad the world got to see who he was this weekend.
Oh, well, yeah, his fighting, guys like that, they don't need a big mouth, man. His fighting is very, very entertaining. Dana doesn't give out compliments loosely. You know what I mean?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
And you know, he wasn't giving too many compliments to Jared Gordon after that.
Jared Gordon or Patty Pimblett?
To Jared Gordon. I'm saying that I saw the post-fight press conference and he was kind of saying how Jared was assuming he won those first two rounds and kind of just controlled him the third round. Personally, I thought Jared won that fight. I do too. I loved his left hook. Oh my goodness. All day long. I was impressed with his striking. I thought he fought smart. I thought that was a smart thing to do, but, you know.
I thought it was a 29-28 for Gordon is what I thought. I thought Jared, you know, was landing some big shots against the fence too. You know, I thought, you know, the eye test is usually pretty good. When you watch a fight, you've got that internal clock and that internal scoreboard. And, you know, obviously we're coaches and, you know, we break down the sport for a living. That's what we do. And when a fight is really close, you kind of think in your head, like, this might be a split decision. I don't know. I thought that Gordon had it 29-28. And I thought maybe it could be a split, maybe. But I thought even if it was, that he would still win. And I thought a split would even be a little bit funny. So unanimous to go the other way.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, you know, we're going to get into this today, but it's just got to change. You know, I mean, there's so much that goes into this. And and this isn't like you play a game and then the next day you have a game. This isn't, you know, there are 17 games in the season for football. This is if you lose one fight, you might go in a completely different direction forever. Yeah. And you know, if you slip on a banana peel and you know you get clipped like we did, we lost, man. Credit to Ponzi, you can eat that. But when you win a fight and you know, and everyone thinks you won the fight and then you lose it unanimously, it's just, you know, it's a mind fuck for a lot of people. And I think that we see everybody's very frustrated. We do have to remind everybody that it's not the UFC that gets these right. Judges. So the shit pisses me off when I see him going, the UFC's rigging this, rigging that. It's like, you think the UFC wants the judging to be fucked up? Are you stupid?
Like when Ankalaev said, I want to fight for the promotion. Yeah. It's like that they don't, it's the athletic commission, right? Who gets the judge?
Yeah. I just hate it how we always just want to get online and bitch and bitch and bitch and bitch. Like, let's look at reality. Reality is these athletic commissions need to be overhauled. There needs to be a national accreditation system. There has to be a standard that happens from here on, no matter what, where there's experience is taken. It doesn't fucking matter if you say, I judge all these fights. No one cares. If your judging is weird and every single time you judge, some weird shit happens, you can't be a judge. You know, if every single time I was coaching, we weren't winning, guess what? You know, you'd have to look at that. You have to look at performance and you have to look at stats and you have to look at results, and certain judges are having goofy ass results all the fucking time. So it's like, I've worked with the Nevada commission. The commissioner, I think, is great. Some of the staff is great. Some of the stuff is leftover stuff from, you know, boxing, and there's no answer, but it's really getting to be annoying. You know,
do you think that now Derek, clearly, I think, it was with the weird thing. I think it was the third round of, Blachowicz Ankalaev that he gave to Ankalaev, which I remember John Anik was talking after. It seemed to be a very questionable. I mean, because that was such a weird fight and such a strange decision. Is that one of the things you're talking about? Like that third round?
You know, here's the problem. You can't just call out one judge. You know, right. I saw some stuff out on one judge. It's all over the internet. But then that judge makes sense on some other stuff. And then it's the other judge. It makes no sense when that judge made sense. So the problem is across the board. I'm not going to name call any one of these judges. I think that you could look through every one of them and say, hey, this kind of doesn't make any fucking sense. And I don't see that in other areas, you know, in other sports, in other boxing, obviously. And that's why no one watches boxing. And with MMA, you know, it just needs to be clear. It needs to be cleared up. Number one is the UFC doesn't pick the fucking judges. So I don't want to keep hearing the same shit over and over again about this was that and this is that. The UFC doesn't want any type of bullshit where people watch it and go, hey, this doesn't make sense. How would the UFC want that for one guy? So that's why the conspiracy shit gets on my nerves.
Right.
The reality is we're in a bad way. And if the fighters that are getting affected, the teams, the sport, and the UFC, everyone's getting affected. And it's the athletic commissions. And some athletic commissions are fucking even way worse. Nevada has tried, I think, to clean up some, but you could point out every one of them. And let's talk about it. It's a government entity. Government employees bust their ass. They're out there grinding. Give me a break, man. So maybe they need to privatize it. Maybe they need to privatize it and start hiring people. And those people need to be credentialed, just like employees of a private company. They need to be drug tested. They need to have a certain amount of experience. Maybe they need to train a certain amount of hours. There needs to be continued education. We've got to change this whole system. I mean, the whole thing has to be changed.
Well, you said something interesting, and I want to ask you about this, because you said that if you go through any one of their records, you're going to find questionable things.
100%.
Is it possible that these guys put more value on certain aspects of MMA? Like, for instance, in baseball, you'll have certain, hey, this guy, he's known for a low strike zone. This guy is known for a higher strike zone. So the umpires kind of are consistent with the fact that they look at a lower strike zone. Is it possible that just clearly, or any of the other guys, hey, this guy puts twice as much value on grappling up against the fence as he does against this or that?
If you could do that and had a set judges, and you could tell the fighters, hey, going into the fight, like, hey, you know what, these guys look for this, that, and that, I mean, that would change your whole camp. How if one of those judges got sick? How if one of those judges didn't show up? How if the fighter fighting was a striker and he knew that the judge loved grappling but he was a striker? Then I mean, he wouldn't want that judge no matter what. So look, if so many people in the sport, like, forget about everyone online. Just forget about them. Take them out. We're talking about coaches. Every single week, I see the coaches all getting online. I don't do that personally, but I see it. Fighters, announcers, these commentators. You think John Anik doesn't fucking know MMA? The guy's watching MMA every single day. He studies ferociously, you know? All of them do. DC, all these experts. These are experts. Everybody is not agreeing with what these people who we don't know We don't know their background. We don't know their credentials. The only thing the commissions can do is not book them again, right? And I know the commissions do this. If judges are a little funky, they won't book them for a while. That's their way of telling them, like, we don't want to use you. I know that they do.
That one guy, I'm not going to mention his name, but
the ref?
No. There's a judge that's been around for a while, and he's really something else. But he was back when I was fighting. And I just, I'm not a fan of him, but you know, that guy's still around for 20 years. So I don't know, there's gotta be a better process. And the fact that guys stick around as long as they do, and they make shitty calls, and they're, I don't know. Hey,
yeah.
But speaking of that fight, I don't know. We're talking about how you judge a fight. Is it out of the world that Jan won those first three rounds? Look at the damage he was doing to those legs.
No.
You know what I mean?
It goes back to the 10-8 on the fifth and how that was looked at. And look, yeah. I mean, that fight, I think people are kind of in the middle of, but the Gordon Patty Pimlet fight.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm talking about. The Ankalaev Jan fight.
Yeah.
The Ankalaev Jan fight, and it's a title fight. You know, I mean, it was weird, but it was a weird fight for everybody, even the judges. So let's be fair. It was just a weird ass fight. But to see the everything get, you know, all the headlines be dominated by the judging talk and this and all the other crap. And it's just like, man, you know, this sport has moved so far. And, you know, when you're on the inside and you see how hard everybody's working, including the UFC, including some of the commissions, you just want, you know, you would like to see the product improve and not regress. And it hurts me to see it regress.
I'm sorry, Jimmy. I like Patty. I like Patty a lot.
Yeah.
I like his confidence in his self-confidence, you know, in his fighting ability. But I believe he was, it's a weird thing. Cause as if you were his trainer, like, I don't know, you have to be honest about that fight, but yet, you don't want to like curb this kid's confidence or anything. Cause when he's talking about, he thinking he won the fight, it wasn't even close. It wasn't close when Rogan was telling him it was close. That's odd to me. Cause God damn, it was close. He looked like there was never a thought that it was close. That could be a problem. Cause there's not going to be any correction there. I think
for him, and this might be true for this fucking kid, I'm not him, I think everybody hates him so much, especially last week, because he was running his mouth and talking that shit about the media, and then everybody attacked him. I think that everybody, he was just like, fuck everybody. I don't think he wanted to admit anything. Right. Even if he thought the fight was close, I think he was like, fuck that. I'm not gonna give anybody anything. And, you know, these guys, man, I don't agree with some of the stuff that happened last week. At the end of the day, these are young guys in their 20s, you know, and they got all that pressure on them. And sometimes I think they act out emotionally, and everybody's trying to interpret it. But just like a bad relationship or, you know, a bad girlfriend, you know, sometimes you say dumb shit and dumb shit happens. And I just think that whole week for him was one of those moments.
Hey, Matt, we got something really fun here. We've been waiting a while to do this. We have these amazing UFC Timex. Now, I'm assuming they're watches. They sent me a box, and I did not open it because we had to wait until we were allowed to open it.
Jimmy, can I ask you something?
Yes.
What's in the box?
Sorry. I disappeared. I'm still here just looking at my box. All right.
I'm opening it up. I am too. Wait. Oh, here we go. I found it. Okay.
It smells like a new gift. This is a Timex. It says UFC Timex on both boxes. I got two boxes.
It does smell nice, Jimmy.
Did you get one box or two? I was hoping I got two and you got one. Okay. Yeah. I'm even going to put my old man glasses on so I can read everything. I do not own a watch, and I do need a watch, but I have not gotten one yet. So I'm actually happy I have this. Hold on.
Ooh. Official timekeeper of the UFC.
All right, let me open this. Hold on,
Jimmy.
Hold on, buddy. Let me open mine.
That.
This is really nice. I know I would have to say it's nice, even if it's not, but this is actually a really nice watch.
Jimmy, it sure is.
Oh, I love this. Okay, here's the struggle. How do I get it out of the box? Okay, there we go. Wow.
Jimmy.
I love this watch. Okay, let me see why they're doing this. Why are we getting this? Because this is really a nice gift.
Because it's the official timekeeper of UFC.
And here's what I love. I love the fact that it has a nice rubber kind of band around it. I hate the little bands that get caught in your arm hair. That drives me nuts. Timex celebrating their 170th anniversary in 2024. This is the first ever official timekeeper and watch partner of UFC. Now, Timex can be seen clocking UFC's greatest moments, counting down 96 hours before every pay-per-view fight on UFC.com. Seen on air counting down every fight on pay-per-view. The recent Timex UFC collection comprised of 45 watches launched October 19th globally. And I'm taking out my little, the thing here that keeps it from, how do I take this out? Hold on.
Jimmy, this is nice.
Okay, now I can wind my watch. This is absolutely and fantastic. And they're reasonably priced, by the way. The collection ranges from $55 to $235. So it's not like you're going to get out of a car at a restaurant and five guys on mopeds are going to pull up and snatch it off your arm. This is just a really nice watch. And this is a good watch to work out in. This is, I actually look good in this watch, and I typically don't look good in watches. Let me talk about Timex for a second. They're known for over a century. They're crafting durable watches built to withstand life's toughest moments. Timex is proud to enter the octagon as the first ever official timekeeper and watch partner of UFC. Timex's three collaborative collections of UFC branded timepieces combine best in class design with no nonsense materials. The result is an unbeatably tough sports centric wearing experience for any fighter and even guys that aren't fighters like me who hang out with fighters. Expertly engineered for strength, street and performance. Each is fully equipped with a hard hitting feature the crowd wants and the pros need. The only watch tough enough for UFC, and it actually makes me look tougher than I am. This is a great watch. It's heavy too. It's got like a nice feel. It's not like one of those little fruity watches. You actually feel like you have a watch on. You're wearing something. I'm going to look at my other one too.
Do you know that Sean O'Malley and Dustin Poirier are their ambassadors?
Yes. I did know that. Yes, I knew that before. Yes,
I know that.
I did know that.
I'm sorry.
It smells good too. Carmen, yes, buddy.
The official timekeeper of UFC.
Yep. And now I'm going to use my teeth and pull this part.
Hey, Christmas came early, Jimmy. Christmas came early for us.
Honestly, I didn't even notice this. I'm so stupid. Look how great this is. They say UFC on the. This is a great gift for any UFC fan you know. It says UFC here on this one. It's a little more subtle and black. And here they kind of write it where you can see it. So if you have a friend who's a UFC fan, or even if people don't like you, but you know someone who's a UFC fan and you want them to like you, this is a great gift to get somebody. Hold on, let me put it on my little arm.
Well, this gift is mine, and I want to say thank you to the UFC and Timex.
Yeah, thank you guys very much. I know, again, you're a sponsor, so I wouldn't trash you if I didn't like it, but I legitimately do like it. I can tell you with all, and I'm not the best. You got Sean O'Malley, you got Dustin Poirier. You don't need 54-year-old me and my Miss Meanie, foghorn, leghorn, nephew's glasses complimenting your watches. But look at these watches. These are both gorgeous.
Yes.
And thank you, Timex, very much. And congratulations to partnering with UFC. A great gift to get anybody. And how cool do I look with two watches?
I wish I could exit out now.
I don't blame you. Thank you, Timex. All right, let's get back to the show. And they're going to give Glover and Jamal Hill is going to, in Brazil, they're fighting for the light heavyweight. And it's funny when you get a guy like Patty, and then the opposite end of the spectrum is Jan, who is like, who literally almost raised Ankalaev's hand. At the end, he probably realized, like, oh, I'm shooting myself in the foot for a rematch here. Because Joe's like, how do you, he goes, well, I don't know if I lost, but I know I didn't win. Like, almost like Jan realized, like, he might be talking himself out of another shot by being so humble.
I think, good. But and you guys will agree, Jan's 40 fucking years old. That's how you are at 40 years old. You're yeah. cool. You're chill. You know, you're like, yeah. oh, well, hey, that sucks. That's how you handle something at 40 years old versus at 27 or whatever Patty Pimblett is, right? And I think we just saw Jan do that. And I think you nailed it. I think he was like, I need to shut the hell up here. I'm kind of killing myself. And, you know, that was just a really weird fight. I'm glad that Glover's getting a shot. I think that's cool. I think that UFC moved on quickly. And I think that, you know, and then we'll see where Ankalaev is. Maybe he can fight, you know, whoever wins. I don't know.
I thought Jan was being very, very cool.
Yeah.
And Magomed, not as much, but Magomed really thought he won, though. So where's my belt? I deserve this. You know, you're not gonna be dancing for a while, Magomed.
That's true.
But, he's probably also a guy who's been overshadowed. I think he probably feels like, you know, I don't, he doesn't get a whole lot of love compared to the way other fighters do. So maybe he's like, this is my shot. And he felt like he did enough and he didn't get, you know, it was just kind of,
he's a hell of a fighter. You know, I did a UFC breakdown on him. And I mean, he's amazing. The guy's amazing. And he's a great fighter, but he's a quiet guy. You know, sometimes those quiet guys, they internalize things. And hey, I think you're right. I think he's just bummed out more than anything. Yeah.
And Duplessis made a good point. He thinks that Till should be fighting at welterweight. What do you think is going on with Darren Till? I think that after a while, people just know to look out for that booming left. And on that level of competition, when you have one main thing that you're doing most effectively, guys are just good enough to look out for it.
I think he has more than just the left. I think he was putting some stuff together. And I thought it was a little frustrating because it looks like he didn't totally empty the tank when – And then, like, he could have put a little bit more output on him when
he was hurt.
How do you pronounce his last name?
Duplessis.
Yeah. When Duplessis was getting that second win, Darren seemed just the fresher fighter. And he was throwing more than I did than the left hand.
He was throwing a good straight kick. I mean, he was kicking nicely.
It was within reach. It feels like it was within reach there, you know?
Yeah, like he was going to surge and knock him out and come back and get the knockout against the fence. It did. The momentum was changing. But I do think, you know, and you know this, Matt. I mean, I was a welterweight, you know? And I remember people telling me, you're big, man. You're a big welterweight. You too. Remember, everyone's like, you're jacked. Dude, me and you are fucking tiny for welterweight now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but back then it wasn't that tiny. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Now, welterweights walk around at 210 pounds, and they're huge. They're 6'2", they're 6'3". And I think Till, in the timeline that he got the injuries and the hardships he's had in the last 4 years, I think the weight classes have changed, and I think middleweights are bigger and stronger. And I think maybe 170 is something that he would have to look at. He, you know, and because you look at Kevin Holland, the guy fought at 85 and then he fought at 70, and they're similarly built, you know. And I think that you saw Kevin Holland have some lasting power, even though against Wonder Boy, it was a striking matchup. Kevin Holland's walking around at 190, you know, and middleweights are walking around at 220, some of these guys. So maybe 170 would help Darren Till. Not get, you know, wrestled and grappled the way that he does, where he seems to not be able to, you know, he got up though, and that guy's a great grappler. He got up multiple times, and maybe there is a size differential there that maybe 70 would work for him. I don't know.
Why do you think guys are walking around so much heavier? Is it that there's so much more knowledge about the weight cut and they're able to do it so much more efficiently?
Yeah. I mean, what happens is, right, nutrition gets better. Dietitians now, you go to the PI, they've got everything they have. You know, they've got all the different stuff, and guys like to be bigger, have a little layer of fat on them so they don't get hurt. And, you know, Matt can speak to this. When you're lean and, you know, you get thrown around and you get hit, it hurts a lot more than when you're 10 or 15 pounds heavier. You've just got more lubrication in your joints. You just feel a little bit better for the camp. So guys aren't going to walk around at their fight weight. They're going to walk around at least 15 or 20 pounds heavier, so that they feel stronger and then they can train. And then sometimes they continue to get bigger because of strength and conditioning and those other things and the hard work they're putting in. And then it becomes a problem, right? Where they're too big. So.
All I know is it's going to be a rough fucking Christmas at the Takakis household. I'm fucking around. a couple of tough weeks for the fucking Takakis boys. Jimmy,
I mean,
yes,
it's a rough game.
Yeah,
fuck. It is.
Yeah, because they were on top of the world. They were both undefeated, tough guys from Philly. They still are tough guys. But man, what a shitty couple of weeks for these poor guys.
You know, bad luck comes in waves, Matt. Shit. And I mean, the thing is, dude, that there's no easy fights anymore out there, you know? And I mean, you see this shit every week. I mean, everybody's tough. And if a guy's coming off a loss, he's pissed off. The other guy's coming off a win and he wants his, you know, energy. And every week there, you're fighting for your life. It doesn't matter. I mean, and sometimes it doesn't go your way. So that was rough. I felt bad for him. Those are nice guys.
Yeah. You know? Big ex-Philly cop. Matt, I think, didn't you pick Jorginho? I thought you said that that's going to be a very tough matchup for Dawkins. I think you actually picked correctly on that.
I wish I could take credit for it, but I think you did the picks when I was in Disneyland.
Oh, then you know what? Maybe it was Dean Thomas or John Anik. It might, I don't know if John would pick. It might have been Dean that said it. I don't remember.
Might have been Dean Thomas.
Maybe I dreamt it. Maybe I just said it after the fact. Maybe like an asshole. I said that after the fight, like I thought of it beforehand.
Yeah, like you called it.
I should have just took that credit right there.
Are you good at picking fights? I'm sorry to interrupt you, Matt. Are you good at picking fights, Dave? Like, I find it very, very difficult. And I bet right. with my head more than my heart more than my head.
As far as people, I can kind of see the patterns. And I think that's what coaches do, right? Same with Matt. You know, I mean, you look for patterns in a fight. And so I feel like everybody, including the odds makers, kind of are pretty close now on fighting, and the matchups now, everyone is so much better that I think you don't have that differential like you used to have back in the day. So
okay, there's more parity, almost like when the NFL went to when they went to salary caps. There's just more parity in the league. It just balances it out a little bit. Yeah, maybe you're
100%.
Right. Maybe, okay,
100%.
I find it so difficult. Like, and we do friendly picks. I don't gamble. I'm too compulsive. So we'll just do it to see who was right. And I'm like, gee, what the fuck was I thinking? Like, I'm wrong about all of them. Like, I'm either right about 90% of them, or I'm wrong about all of them. I find it very, very difficult.
Yeah, I think that, I don't know. I think if you're training and in the sport, you know, like Matt's on the, he's at the gym every day. I'm at the gym every day. I'm watching these patterns develop, and you kind of, the sport's changing so fast and so much. And so I think you kind of stay in line with those patterns and you can kind of see things. Like, I totally agree with Matt that I thought Darren Till was about to knock Duplessis out in the second round when Duplessis gassed out and he was walking him down towards the fence and Duplessis was covering up, but then he didn't. So, you know, if you had bet on Till there, you'd probably super excited. And then, you know, one last takedown and that was it. So you just never know.
Hey guys, ready? Speaking of a great corner advice, 7+5.
I mean, I know it's 12, but I'm not in the fight.
Now listen, what about your son's birthday? Hey, listen, can I tell you something? If I'm sitting on a stool and I'm fighting, and I had kids, and Longo brings up, oh, your daughter's birthday. I have enough trouble remembering that shit at the CVS. Are you fucking serious? Oh, let me see. Six. Oh wait, seconds out. Go fuck yourself. I like Matt Arroyo. He was in the house on the Ultimate Fighter season 6. He was one of my guys. I like Matt Arroyo. I did seminars at his jiu-jitsu school. He's a nice guy. But holy fuck. When you do mathematics, it brings you a certain part of your brain. Really? It brings me in fucking to fucking high school or some shit. Go fuck yourself. I got a guy trying to take my fucking head off. Why don't I address that? I don't know. And I like Matt.
Now, Dean Thomas made a point, and I'll ask both of you this. He said that it was to see if he was thinking with an instinct side of his brain or if it was the other side of his brain, if he was actually – Dean Thomas gave an explanation that was a test just to see which side of his – is there any accuracy to that or as a coach?
Fight or flight. Here's what I said. Yeah. And I think Matt's fucking hilarious, by the way. And me and him are very similar. Sometimes when people are sucking, we just tell them, you fucking suck. Like, what are you doing? Get your fucking hands up. Get your chin down. You need a takedown. Like he said, you need the fucking takedown. You got to win. And for me, I'm very direct. I'm very, very direct because there's not a lot of time. And I think fighting is, there's not a lot of room for bullshit in fighting, right? If you bullshit at the wrong moment, you know, but I will say this, I will change my style for whatever the fighter is. So like Kennedy, Kennedy, when you yell at him, he doesn't do very well with that. So you got to just tell him
right.
very direct, you know, instructions. Jeff Neal, he likes that shit. You know, he's always like, Coach, if I'm fucking up, you need to get on my ass. He tells me, like, don't sugarcoat it. So with Jeff, you know, if he's behind or he's not doing what he needs to do, I'll get all over him. Macy's different. Damon Jackson is different. Everybody is different. Morono is different, you know. So Ryan Spann, it just depends on the athlete. And I think I thought, you know, I'm not going to disagree with Matt on that, but we got to say Billy Q got the win after that. So Arroyo is just going to be like, hey, whatever it takes to win. And I can agree with whatever it takes to win. And I know Matt can agree with whatever it takes to win. So
Hey, all I know is I know Billy Q also. Who knows? Maybe he loves math. I don't know. Maybe he loves math, and maybe he has a better memory than I do. When I have three daughters. Maybe he has one kid. I don't know. But all I know is when I go to the pharmacy and I gotta pick up some shit for my three kids, I'm always fucking up. And if I'm under a clock to do that, I also want to get water. And oh yeah, I want to worry about that savage across there that just was trying to elbow me in the fucking face. But no, let's go back to mathematics.
But me and you, and again, it goes back to generational shit. You know, I think that's just a generational thing. We look at them sometimes and we think they're soft. You know it, I know it. And we think that they're just a little different than us. The fact is, they are. They got raised different from us. When we grew up, it was shut the fuck up, get outside and figure it out, you know? Yeah. And it's always been that way. So,
different strokes for different folks. I agree with you. Some fighters, like what I talked about with young Marcus over the weekend, it was specific just to him.
Yeah.
And it worked and it felt great. So it's like, but, you know, because I don't think I'd be throwing the mathematics out.
Well, is it hard for you guys as coaches, both you guys? Is it hard for you, like you said, it's a different generation. Is it hard for you to adjust and talk to a different, like, or it, does in your mind, do you want to just go shut the fuck up? Or do you have to realize, all right, this kid's 23 years old. He's a much different.
I think the goal is to win. And, you know, me and Matt are very much alike. Like, whenever I see him corner, I think it's fucking spot on. And, you know, God bless him. He's always complimented me, too. And I appreciate that. Because I think it's just like, you got 60 seconds, man. Like, you know, you don't have a lot of time to bullshit. But listen to the story he led with. We know Matt doesn't watch anime. Give me a fucking break. He hasn't seen anime in his whole fucking life. But he knew his kid wore the anime shirt to practice and had all the anime shit. And he made a mental note and he fired it away. And the kid came back and got the RNC and won. So I think that, you know, and he's still happy. God bless him. So, I mean,
great.
I don't know. I think that we do whatever we need to do. I bet you yelled it to him, though, didn't you? You didn't say, hey, you're an anime character. You yelled it to him.
I was going off. It was good. That's the fight. My first guy went in there. He mauled his guy. I didn't even get a chance to yell. Marcus down two rounds after that third round. And then in between the second and third, the fact that he was responsive.
Yeah.
When he fired off those kicks with a kid that wasn't respecting him, the kid wasn't respecting him. The kid was walking him down. And all of a sudden he's firing off the kicks. Where'd this come from? And then all of a sudden he got the takedown. It's like, if it ended with that, I would have been almost
100%. You know, because you changed the momentum.
You're losing this fight. You could have just been already depressed on your stool and whatnot. And it was great. It was a great moment, man. So, yes, that was phenomenal. It was a good night. And also this girl, Lauren, that trains in with us, she had a kickboxing match. She won. So it was just a great night all around, man, you know.
And I think, you know, you can speak to this, Matt. It's just about seeing things through, right? Like you kept saying, since he changed the fight, you were already happy. It wasn't about winning. You just wanted to see him dig himself out of a hole. You wanted to see what kind of character you had. You wanted to see what he would do under the gun. What are you about when you're behind, man? What are you about? And he showed you who he was. And that's all you want as a coach, is you just want to improve people. It's really what you want. And winning and competition is the tool that we use to test that. But that's really what our goal is. So, you know, it's a pure thing in that sense.
It's big. It's really character development. This same kid I'm talking about, this is his second fight. the first fight he went in, took the opponent down, submitted him within a couple of minutes. It was cool. But this was something else. This was him dealing with, he dealt with a real fighter. This other kid was talented. And he came from Tiger Showman's. And Tiger Showman's is, I don't know if they have them near you, but they're like, they got like a chain, but they're very, they're a little commercial, so people might goof on that, but they put out very good fighters. Fighters that got into the UFC, Uriah Hall, like eventually came from.
No, I knew that.
So they put out very good local fighters that got all the way to the world stage. So the kid was well-rounded. So I don't know. It's not about just winning. It's also who did you beat? So
he beat
a tough kid. So it's just, again, really, it's a good night. But also, speaking of tough kids, not to segue into that, but Bryce Mitchell.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that real quick.
I thought that was a tough fight for him. You know, Ilya is a super talented kid. And I think that everybody knows he's a guy that's going to be in the top five or top 10. And I thought Bryce knew that it was a tough fight. I mean, he says stuff, on air, and I think he's got his own little personality. You don't know if he's trolling everybody or if he's just being himself. You don't know if he's joking or if he's serious, but I think he took him seriously. And I thought Bryce did a lot better than people give him credit for. It's like revisionist history. Everyone was like, he got dominated. Well, he got the takedown in the first round. He was landing a little bit of stand-up with his hooks and his kicks. And Ilya, I thought, was being very smart. I was impressed with Ilya. He was very patient. Usually he's very aggressive. And I thought he showed growth there. He was very patient. But I thought Bryce did well in the first round. I thought it was, fairly close fight. But in the second round, Ilya started, his boxing is so clean. And he hits those level changes. And he hit that uppercut, left hook, right hand. And he can wrestle. He's got great jiu-jitsu. But I think Bryce will be back. And I think Ilya will go forward. I think, Bryce can do what he did to Edson, to some other people who are in the upper half of the, top 15 and top 20. Obviously, he's got to, try to work on his striking. But let's be honest, okay? Can Ilya beat Volkanovski?
Could he?
Yeah, you think he could beat Volkanovski? Let's look at the top five at 145. Josh Emmett, Volkanovski, Max Holloway. Dude, are you kidding me? So it's like, as you got to look at where he's going to go from there. He did beat Bryce, but when you start looking at the top three and top five at 145 pounds, that you're talking about, and I think Ilya is super talented, but he's a little bit small. I thought he was a little bit small, and I think that you look at Volk, who can fight 55, Max is gigantic, Josh Emmett is a tank. So I wonder what if Ilya would ever be able to make 35 and still carry that power. I don't know, but the size would be the only thing that moving forward, skill wise, he's phenomenal.
What do you think about Volkanovski going up and fighting at 155?
I mean, I think Volkanovski was 214 pounds at one point. And, he's got the bone density and the muscle mass. He's a strong dude. I mean, Volkanovski is no joke. And the guy is so committed to winning. And I still don't think he gets enough credit as he really deserves. I mean, he's a really focused guy. He doesn't talk shit. He's just a professional. And he's got a tall test with Islam. But when you look at it, Charles Oliveira was fighting incredibly. And we know he had an off night, but Islam made it look easy. And Islam has the ability on the ground, and he just looks like he's so strong. And I go back to, I did a breakdown on him, and it was when he submitted Dan Hooker, and no one gave him enough credit. He took Dan Hooker down, submitted him with a Kimura. And Matt knows how hard it is to get a Kimura. Look at Dan Hooker's resume. He's not a guy easily submitted. So Islam has a certain strength there that, I don't think you want to, discount. And I know that you go back to the Chad Mendez fight and Volkanovski got taken down a lot. That was a long time ago, so that fight's going to be interesting. And credit to Volkanovski, he absolutely believes he's going to win that fight too, by the way.
These bigger guys that Islam controls, guys that they're not known for it, but they have the wrestling background, even like Bobby Green, who's good at the anti-wrestling, just keeping it up. He makes it look easy. Everybody knows what
Drew Dober.
Drew, I was about to say Drew Dober. Drew Dober's not a little guy.
You look at the Armand fight, though. That's the real one to look at. Because, you know, Armand's such a good grappler. And, I mean, he was just – he out-wrestled him, you know what I mean? And you're talking about – and Matt, I think, can speak to this. I mean, being a dominant wrestler, I mean, a truly dominating wrestler, I don't think there's anything that's more powerful than that. But obviously, he has a well – he's well-rounded. He won in striking. He has great jiu-jitsu, too, but it's his grappling strength, similar to Khabib's. It's just like, man, you could have good jiu-jitsu too, but a guy will just shut you down. He's that strong and that dominant in grappling. And that's Islam.
I mean, I was going to say, like, Volkanovski's working with, like, Craig Jones, some really good submission guys. Like, Craig Jones is a good guy to have attacking you day in and day out if you're going to be fighting a guy. Like, he's, like, one of the best in the world. So the fact that he survived on the floor in deep submissions with a guy like Ortega,
that has 100%. To
be something. And sometimes, and I know this, and doing, you know, being in the game as long as you have, safe, sometimes you're rolling with smaller guys, they're harder to control. The bigger guys are easy to control.
Yeah, you're right.
The first time I ever fought a guy shorter than me was a guy named Ivan Medjevar.
And Ivan Medjevar, yeah, I know.
He's an entertaining guy, but I wasn't used to fighting a guy shorter, so I'm in half guard, passing his half guard, and then all of a sudden he, like, bounces to his feet, and I'm like, how is he to his feet? So it's like the little guys sometimes they got little legs, and those little limbs are harder to snatch. And
so it's true.
Easier to get up to your feet. That sounds silly, but it is true.
No, that is such a good fucking point that you bring up, because there's not a lot of movement and room for them to be up, right? They can go they shrimp and they're on their base, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're against the fence, they're on their base, and they've got a low base. Yes. So they're hard to take down because they're fucking like a little tree stump.
Yes, so, where's the short jokes then?
Yeah, you're right. But I still think, and you know this from rolling all these years, there's still those guys, man. They underhook you and put your back flat, and you're just like, this guy just feels like a ton of bricks. And that's really, we're just going to have to see if Islam, you know, can do that early to Volk, because Volk can definitely figure him out. And has a very high fight IQ, and he can, you know, hit those inside leg kicks and move and use his movement. The guy's a genius, and he really game plans well with his coach from Freestyle too. I think doesn't get enough credit. He's a great coach too. The guy that's been with him since the beginning, and they really break things down really, really well. And you can see the film study. So I think he's going to have some tricks for Islam and be ready. But if Islam takes him down and puts him flat, and you don't see a lot of movement, he can't get it to his base.
Yeah,
we'll see.
It's gonna be hard. It's silly because every time Volkanovski fights, yeah, it's not that I try to root against him or choose against him or pick against him, but I kind of go with the other guy. I just happen to go with Max and with Ortega, and then I'm like, man, I'm always saying I'm not gonna pick against him again. And now he's fighting Islam. So I'm like, oh, shit, man.
Yeah.
I have to go back on my word.
I definitely think it'll be a better fight than Islam and Oliveira. I mean, I definitely think that. So, you know.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Next, go give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Let's go, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
How about that Raul Rosas Jr.? How good, 18 years old, to not just to win, but to be as calm looking as he was. And some guys have a good poker face, but you could see that he just really wasn't overwhelmed by the moment.
I will say he was in our locker room, and what a sweet kid, you know, like, you know, I mean, I was looking at him and just watching how he interacted with the corner, and, you know, he had a lot of media with him and everybody was filming him. I mean, it was a lot, you know, you know, we've been in main events before and been followed around, and they were giving him similar treatment, and he was just chilling, you know? And I mean, he was just taking it all in. I didn't see him get too high or too low. He wasn't talking shit. He wasn't in the back yelling and like trying to hype himself up. He was cool as hell back there. And he went out there and did exactly what, you know, he was doing in the warm-up. So that's really what it's about. Can you execute under the lights? And he executed, you know, flawlessly in that. So that kid, I think, man, that kid in a couple of years will really be something. But again, when you look at the road, bantamweight, featherweight, lightweight, welterweight, like, I mean, you could just pick out of a box against some kid that nobody knows who's 0-0 or 1-0 in the UFC, and he might be a goddamn terrorizer. So, I mean, there's a long way before we start talking about these guys as contenders. But as an 18-year-old kid, what a G this kid is, you know, going to high school. I mean, awesome, unbelievable, incredible. And I think it just shows where the UFC is, that this is the evolution now, that these kids are 18 years old, have evolved that much, trained that much. The Robbie Lawler stuff was adorable, with him showing the Robbie Lawler, the post with him when he was a little kid watching Robbie Lawler. And he was walking around with his shirt off at his house. And I don't know if you saw that. He was walking around with his shirt off, and Robbie was on the screen, and he was flexing like Robbie. And Robbie actually called him, I think, last week and talked to him before his fight, because he saw the post. But I mean, how cool is that, right? You know, that this kid got videos, you know, walking around acting like Robbie Lawler, and then he was on the same card. And then Morono goes, he probably doesn't give two shits to see me. And it was funny because, you know, Morono replaced Lawler.
Yeah.
And it would have been Lawler would have been in his locker room. And I think mad props to that kid.
Yeah, and he also the main fight of the undercard too. So they gave him a pretty prestigious spot, you know, a high pressure spot. In addition to being his agent, you're right. He handled everything really well.
He did. He handled it really, really well. Shout out for the minivan for his mom, like getting shit done in there too, like, you know, getting things done. I mean, how many kids buy their mom a minivan? You know, I mean, I think that's awesome. So.
Dana did the right thing. He gave the $50,000 to everyone who got a finish. So, I don't know if you knew about that, Jimmy. That was
Again, I did not know.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. He said Santa Claus coming early.
Maybe he's gonna give that to his favorite podcast people too, Jimmy.
Christmas. That would be nice. That would be nice. We don't need $50,000. I mean, a little something would be nice. I'd take something.
You know, we can split that.
We'll probably get shirts. We'll probably get UFC shirt. And how I was happy for Edmund Shahbazyan too. He was 11-0, then he went to 11-3. And we talk a lot about guys that when they're undefeated for so long, it almost becomes such a part of the identity that losing can be. Happened to Dominic Reyes, happens to a lot of guys at one point, tied to Tuivasa, where it just seems like that's such a part of the identity that it shakes them in some way when they do lose a fight. So I was happy to see him get that win.
I think that, you know, it's, you know, we could track this back to Raul type guy. Like, Raul's got all this hype. He's going to be 4-0, 5-0. But once these guys run into ranked guys like Edmund did, you know, I mean, these top 15 guys, man, they've been there for 4 years, 5 years. I mean, they're fucking, that is their, where they live, you know? And yeah, they might not fight a lot. Yeah, there's politics, but guess what? They're fighting the best guys all the time, and they're used to the pressure, and they know how to win. Look at Neil Magny. This guy knows how to win fights. So these ranked fights are just different. And Edmund was so young, yet talented, but young, you know, and against Brunson, these guys just drowned him. And I think he just had to retool, and credit to Mick Maynard and the UFC for, you know, letting him take time off and build up, and then try to get him the right fights, because, you know, he's talented, right? And that goes for everybody. Having a little time off to work on yourself, especially these younger guys that get in so young. You know, like you said, I mean, sometimes losing breaks guys' whole confidence, and they fall apart. So it's a process. It's a journey.
And Ali's his manager, I think, and he suggested it. And you got to give credit to the manager, too, for saying, hey, look, let's not go for the quick money. Let's take time and really make sure that this is going to be here in 5 years, as opposed to, you don't want to have. Who's the fighter I'm thinking of? He was a young, good-looking blonde kid.
Sage Northcutt,
yeah. And then he wound up having a tough time. It just seems like he didn't have enough time to work on what he needed
Tommy
to work
Morrison.
On.
Sorry,
Tommy Morrison.
Yeah, I mean, so listen, we touched base on pretty much everything.
I was sorry to see Joaquin lose. Chris Curtis.
Oh yeah.
Joaquin Buckley looked really good until he got hit with that. I think it was a right that stopped everything.
He was flowing in there, and I mean he was in control. And Chris Curtis has got heavy hands though, and I think he was just waiting and being patient. Chris Curtis is another guy. These guys that go and lose and go through hardship and these stumbles and come back, these guys are dangerous, man, because they've already been burned. They've already had, the hard times, and they climbed out of that. And that's not easy. So when they're in the octagon and they're going through losing a round or getting hurt, they stay a lot calmer and a lot cooler than the guys that don't have those experiences, right? And it goes to what we were just saying. So Chris Curtis is a guy that's not easily deterred. And I think he showed that. He stayed patient. Landed that left hand off that kick. Joaquin was fading away. You don't want to throw kicks on your back foot when you fade away because you're off balance. And that exact thing happened. And, it was just one punch and that was it.
And can I just say that I was fucking around when I was saying about it being a hard, not a very Merry Christmas at the Dukakis household? I got finished with a spinning back fist, first ever in the UFC. All right.
Oh yeah, that's.
I got my losses, guys. You'll be back. You're tough, fucking guys.
Yeah.
I'm just fucking around.
Well, it is tough. Two brothers lose in that short a period of time. I mean, it is a rough week. Yeah, it's a rough holiday. You're right.
Yeah, yeah, but I bet they'll support each other, and their family will support them. And again, it's like you could also look at us as two fucking badass brothers that made it to the UFC. You know, and I mean, I think what makes me sad now is I think that we're forgetting how special it is for someone to make it to the UFC, right? Like, man, we're so used to having the cards every week. We're so used to seeing everything that everyone's like, yeah, well, who are you? Are you fighting for a belt? Are you ranked? Like, you fucking suck. It's like, these are the best fighters in the world. And Matt knows this too. It's such a sweet community, man. When you go to weigh-ins, everybody's so chill and loving and respectful. And I would say that MMA fighters, coaches, people in the MMA community, and you could say I'm a homer, you could say whatever you want, are some of the best fucking people there are, because they got honor and because they got to deal with face-to-face combat. And you can talk as much shit as you want, but when you got to go stand like this face-to-face with the guy and the door shuts, it's you and him. You're going to square it away. And there's a lot of just very, very great people that I've met doing this for, 20 years, and people that really live with honor and character and integrity and keep their word. Yeah, there's loudmouths. Yeah, there's tons of those people, but the Dawkus boys and all the, so many people on the roster that no one knows, the Moronos, they don't get any credit, but they're such good people, man. And they're doing such great work in the community, and they're people that should be looked up to. And, they stumble too, but at least they got the balls to get in there, man. So nothing but credit to everybody in that roster.
Do you have a, I have a thing. We all have things that we like to see. My favorite thing to watch in MMA is guys that destroy legs. Like watching what Jan did to Magomed's leg, like just watching a guy do that and to know that a guy's leg is hurt so bad that he hops, like, cause that's basically saying you really fucking hurt me. Like for a fighter to let another fighter know that he's that hurt. Yeah. Is there something that you like for me, I could watch guys like that or Barboza or the old Jose when he would kick a lot, Justin Gaethje, anything you like the most to see? I mean, I know you want to win, but just as a fan of watching guys fight.
Well, Sarah, I think is going to agree with me. I mean, whenever you got a guy that can dominate physically in the wrestling, and that goes back to, look, we had changed our style. When I first started coaching at a gym called Octagon 2009, was a head coach in 2009. We wrestled so much because the guys had more of a wrestling base. They weren't comfortable striking. They made one mistake. Look what happened this weekend. They would lose. So we wrestled. Well, things changed and everybody was able to defend the wrestling And so you had to stand, right? And so now we balance it back out. Now, you know, Jeff Neal, Ryan Spann, Morona this weekend, Diego Ferreira. I mean, I got some savages over there and they all stand and bang. That's what we do. And we just shut down the takedown because I think that's where the game has evolved. But when you have a dominating wrestler like an Islam or a Khabib, someone that can go in there and it doesn't matter. Look at Khabib, you know, and I love Justin Gaethje. He's a sweet kid, damn good fighter. But I mean, Khabib walked him down. You remember that? He was getting hit in the face. I mean, Justin Gaethje is not a fucking game. Justin Gaethje was hitting Khabib. Khabib was just taking it and walking him down like a psycho, like, wait till I grab you, dude. And I mean, that shit, you know, I mean, what? If you don't knock the guy out, he walked at him. He wasn't even jabbing. He was just walking him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? And when you got guys like that, you know, I think that's why you see Bo Nickel with so much confidence. And you got guys that can grab your ass like that and just put you down, control you. Man, you know, that's something. So it does look boring sometimes when there's not a lot of ground and pound or submissions, but it is for a coach. I think it's one of the most dominating things because you know how hard it is.
And what's next for, I mean, I love Jeff Neal and Ryan Spann. It was just devastating what he did to Reyes. What's next for him and what does he have to do to get closer? Because I know he wants a shot. I think he even mentioned that after that fight.
Yeah. Well, Ryan was in a great position. Had an incredible fight against Dom Reyes. And, you know, everyone's like, well, Dom's so chinny. Well, he fought Yuri and the whole first round was pretty damn close, you know, and he looked dangerous as hell in that fight. Yeah, he ended up losing in the second round. But I'm just saying, Yuri's knocking everyone out in the first round. Watch the first round of Yuri and Dom. So Dom's dangerous. And, you know, Ryan didn't really get a whole lot of credit for that fight. And I get it, you know, and Ryan stumbled too. And I think when you've stumbled, people don't believe. But, and Matt knows this, fighters hit their streaks, man. And they start to peak and mature and they start to come into their own. And Anderson did it. George St. Pierre did it. Khabib's done it. Matt Serra fucking did it when he beat George St. Pierre, you know. And if you hit it at the right time, right, you can really make magic happen. And I feel like Ryan is that guy, you know, like I was speaking about Chris Curtis. He's a guy that has had stumbles, but now he's just finding his groove. And physically, 6'5", you know, that reach, that speed, the power, the jiu-jitsu, the guillotines, the chokes, the wrestling, he's a problem. And, you know, he's fighting Nikita in the main event February, the fourth week of February. And that's going to be a tough test for him. But I feel like he's really one of those guys that's, like I said, he's getting his groove. And Jeff Neal is fighting Shavkat in the co-main event January 14th. And that's a fight that he wanted. Shavkat's tough as hell, undefeated, scary guy. But, you know, that's the fight because those guys in the top five, Colby, you know, Kamaru and Leon, obviously that's not going to happen. He's already fought Bilal, beat Bilal. But Bilal deserves a lot of credit because he's been on a win streak as well. So, and him and Gilbert, that fight didn't materialize for whatever reason. So, we'll see. You know, if Jeff gets past Shavkat and does great, we'll see what's next for him and for Ryan. But those guys are, like I said, they're guys that were undefeated 4-0, 5-0, got in the rankings, stumbled a little bit for health reasons, timing, whatever. Now they're kind of really surging up into that top 10, top five. And you've got to really be prepared for that level. And I think that those guys now are prepared for it.
Jimmy, I want to just add in here because I didn't talk to you about that Florida card because I was away that day.
Okay.
And really quick, Roman, how do you pronounce his last name?
Dolidze. Yeah.
Say it again.
I say Dolidze, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
I always think I'm right until I hear John Anik or Bruce Buffer say it differently. Then I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. So
I was impressed when Roman, what he did with Jack Hermanson, that grappling display. I'm impressed with his confidence in his power and his strikes.
Yeah.
Jack Hermanson knows he's a very good grappler. And for him to get I love the exchanges. And yeah. I the fact that he got him in a calf slice and he kept him there to ground and pound him out. The control of that was a beautiful thing. A lot of guys would have tapped to that calf slice, but yep. Jack's very flexible.
That's right.
He kept it, he triangled it. And he beat him up from there. And I'm also impressed with the call out. Who's calling out Khamzat? And how come nobody's talking about it until right now? I mean, he's calling out yeah. Kamzat. I think that's a fascinating fight.
I mean, for this guy, Roman, to take this fight, right, unranked, and to come in and win this fight, like the way he did. I mean, first of all, we know Hermanson is the fucking joker on the ground. That's his shit. He's great on the ground, you know? He's a guy that takes you down, submits you, gets your head. He's very well versed in everything. Footlocks, too. I mean, the guy is – his game plan was to take him down, you know?
Yeah.
And so for him to hit the calf slicer, which Matt knows, this is probably the hardest submit. This is probably harder than a twister, I would say. I'd say the calf slicer is harder than the twister. If you had to rank it, I mean, it might be the hardest submission there is. Maybe the omoplata, I mean, the go-go plata might be harder, but –
Well, the calf slice, when guys are going to get out of a knee bar, it's right. It could be there more often than people think. But if you try to go for it from different, like one hook in and stuff like
that. There's probably not five calf slicers in the history of the UFC. Yeah. Definitely maybe not more than 10.
Charles Oliveira definitely got one.
Charles Oliveira was the first one. He was the first one. Oh. But I don't know if there's more than 10. You know what I mean? So for him to do it to Jack on 5 days notice or whatever it was, and then to get on top and finish like that and keep the control, like Matt said, I mean, that was a bonus no matter what happened for the rest of the night. That's a bonus every single time. And then for him to go number 8, yeah, man, nothing but credit to that dude. I mean, he's hitting his stride like we were talking about.
I would like to see him versus Kamzat. I think that would be something else. I know Kamzat, we're thinking he's probably –
He's not taking that. Kamzat won't take that
he's
fight.
Not, unless, yeah, he's yeah. Rum doesn't have a big enough name.
And why would you fight down against a guy so dangerous? It's almost like there's no upside. If you beat him, it's like, well, you're a bigger name. And you know, it's a tremendous risk. I don't think he's afraid of it, but I don't think he would take that fight. It's a risk he doesn't need to take.
I agree with that.
It's something we might see in the future, though, I'm telling you.
After Frankie Edgar lost to Brian Ortega, taking a fight he didn't have to, because everyone was like, what the fuck am I thinking? Taking a fight I don't have to, because it cost him a shot at the title, even though everybody loved Frankie for taking the fight.
True.
Yeah. You know, because he's such a tough guy. Well, Saif, that's I guess our show, Saif. We appreciate you being on. I could talk to you for hours. You're such a great guest. We went way longer than we normally do. What do you want to promote besides Fortis down there in Dallas? Is there anything you want to promote?
No, I mean, we don't got to promote anything of mine. It's always a pleasure. I haven't talked to you guys forever. You know, I appreciate you always giving me love too, you know, and Matt always giving me love. Like, that shit matters, man, especially coming from coaches, you know, that know. And, you know, we're nice about it. We're sugarcoating it, but, you know, we mind meld on that shit big time. He knows what I'm talking about.
I was watching the fights in Florida with my father-in-law. I don't know if I told you, Saif. I said it on the show, though. And they showed both corners. It was you and one of your fighters and the other corner. And they had the other corner's audio. And I go, this is bullshit. I go, we want to hear him. I'm telling Ciro, my father-in-law. Trust me. I go, you want to hear this corner. I go, this is bullshit. All of a sudden, they went over to you. And they went over to you like mid-fuck. You're like, you better fucking get in there. I'm like... That's what I'm talking about. My Ciro drinking his wine, and it was great. So,
I appreciate that, man. I do.
You know, it's not only good technical advice, but you know, it's that cattle prod the guys need sometimes. Yeah, so I love it. I do. Keep up the good work, bro.
Yeah, good talking to you, Saif. Thank you very much, and come back again, please, anytime you want.
It's my pleasure, guys.
Okay, buddy.
That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Exco, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Exco, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.